He keeps himself in trim by bending bars of iron. This bar is the genuine article which we tested before he began to play with it.
Beyond the bend. Beyond the bend.
All right. Everybody, we have a special guest here. Go take your power rack and chop it up with a sawzall and turn it into bending stock, because we have James Fuller in the house, Strongman Archaeology. Welcome to the show, James.
Thank you. That's the best I've ever heard. Yeah, just chop it up and make it into bending material. Yeah, why not?
All right.
Everybody go get bent.
Oh, yeah.
Before we get going, I got a few announcements. Last week, I announced that Barrel Strength has cert bars, aluminum cert bars. Those have been recalled because the stock was bad, so I don't think too many people ordered them, but Gil is working that out. The other thing Gil has going on is a grip implement called the Flask. If you can do a pull-up on that thing, you get on a roster. So if you can do a pinch pull-up, you're getting on a list. The other thing I want to talk about is Horrido bending. Jan Heller, former guest of Germany. He's got some really, really good bolts, some really hard bolts. We got bending certifications for snapping, bare hand, reverse, double underhand, double overhand, whatever you want to be on, he's got a list for it. So go to Horrido Bending and get on those lists. We got Grip and Bend Italia. You want to order some bars from Italy, get on that list. There's like two Americans, no Canadians. Get on that list. Grip and Bend Italia on Instagram. Get with it. Last, my friend Dennis, Devin Hoover, is keeping track of who's bending 80D nails unbraced. This is an unofficial roster. You bent one of those things, you want to get on a list, get a Eat Chalk Get Big. Also, if you've bent 260Ds taped together, get on that list too. Get in touch with Eat Chalk Get Big, my friend Devin Hoover.
Wow.
Lastly, JT Straussner, former guest, has thechallengedude.com. There's only six people on that roster. That's a stainless bar and a red equivalent. I'm on there. I think Don Cummings just got on there. Order those bars and get on there. It's going to be a long winter. And lastly, if you're not part of the Steel Shredder group of David Horn on Facebook, get with it, because there's stuff going on all the time there. There's grip contests, there's steel contests, steel snapping. It's so much fun. There's plenty of time to get your steel delivered. And that's it. All right. James, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So this one's going to be a little bit different, because your specialty is, I'd say, steel bending adjacent, but there's lots of through lines, and people are excited for this one. But I'll start it the same way anyway. Tell me about the first time you remember seeing someone bend some steel.
Bend some steel. Geez, I would have been pretty young. I probably wasn't even in kindergarten yet.
Wow.
And just the men working on vehicles, if you needed a piece of steel or if you needed something to augment your tool. I mean, in Maine, they almost seem to get more excited if they don't have the right tool for the job, because it gives them a chance to create something, you know. So they would bend and shape either rod or square stock to do whatever they needed it to do for to work on a motor, or to do a mount on a body, you know, for mounting with the frame and everything. I don't know if I can remember the first time, but I remember it was common, you know. You'd lean into it, you know. You'd have a pair of gloves on, you'd lean into it, curl it, crimp it, whatever you got to do, you know. Use your body weight, squeeze it with your legs. So, you know, it's not much different than what you see guys doing, you know?
Yeah, that's interesting. So that was more out of necessity than like sport, I might say.
Yeah. It's just what I grew up with, and I think a lot of sport comes from guys who, well, like I'm sure playing with an axe and seeing levering it down to your face. I'm sure that started with lumberjacks who maybe had a break and ate lunch and messing around after work or after lunch going, hey, I can do this. Can you?
Yeah.
Or guys at the boatyard, you know, back when they used to make chains by heating it up and then pounding the ends together, bending and pounding on an anvil. Hey, I can do this with a hammer. Can you do this with a hammer?
Right.
So I think a lot of what we do has come from some utility.
Definitely.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It, I mean, maybe I'm full of it, but it just always made sense to me that the guys at some point, the contests are going to come from the guys that used to have a specific purpose.
Oh, yeah. And, absolutely. You know? Yeah.
And
you hear about that with the historic stone lifting, that it was just like two farmers in a field, like taking a break or whatever. And just, you know, hey, can you lift that? And
sure.
And it becomes a
thing. It's really interesting. I think the reason why history is important with everything, I don't think just lifting or just bending, but I think if you can kind of understand what was the genesis of it, you know, what was the need or necessity for it, then maybe it'll help you understand what you can take it to the next level. You understood where it came from.
Yeah.
Not that that's, you have to do that, but I think history is, like studying history of lifting has helped me understand how and why we do things today and how and why it may not be better or why, where it may have lost its way in some respects. And I'm not saying someone's going to go get a degree in it, but if you understand where it came from, I think it can help you understand maybe the intent of the first people to do it. Mm-hmm. Say, hey, maybe I want to go that way. Maybe I want to see if I can take it that way. You know?
Yeah.
So it can make it interesting, at least, you know.
Definitely. And I think when you develop a passion for something, you know, like my dad's a musician, he taught me how to play, and like music was a very big part of my upbringing. And you know,
what do you play?
I play guitar, drums, a little bit of this, I can fake most things, but
I played flute,
cool,
some clarinet and saxophone, so
nice.
Tuba, yeah, yep. And sing.
Oh, great. I played trumpet in school, but in my
cool
teenage life and adult years, it was kind of just playing in punk and rock bands and stuff like
cool.
that.
Yeah.
But same kind of thing. It was like I'd discover a band, I'd want to know who their influences were, and I'd be right. tracing it back until the, you know, like the
Buck
Johnsons and the Howlin' Wolves and the, you know, Lightnin' sure. Hopkins, the blues guys, and then figuring out what they were doing, playing slide guitar a bottle and a knife, and you know, just always anything you're interested in. I think if you have a depth of love for it, you're going to go backwards, you know?
Yeah, I think you want to understand your passion better.
Mm-hmm.
You
know? Definitely.
I think the nice thing about passion is it does away with the foolishness of self-esteem or intelligence. Mm. If you're passionate about something, you simply must drink more of it. And you don't think about, am I smart enough or am I good enough? It doesn't even enter your head. You're so in love with it that you'll go through a brick wall. You'll walk over hot coals to learn more about whatever it is. You don't even consider, you become limitless.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because you're just, I'm going to know more. That's it. Yeah. There's no question. And it's kind of cool to see that with people that are passionate. It's like,
right.
They have no idea that they can't do that or that they shouldn't even try because they don't have the right education. No, they don't care.
Yeah.
You know,
just
go and do it.
You know? Yeah.
That's pretty cool about passion.
And that's what I'm finding as I do more of these. You know, it's like I said on another episode that it's kind of ironic that I'm trying to host a podcast, because there's often times when I find small talk to be quite difficult, right? Like, how's the weather, this and that, you know, like at some party. But if I sense that someone has some passion for something, some depth, some love for something, it doesn't have to be something I love too, you know? It just has to be that attitude within them and that quest. Then we could talk all day. I remember the instance was about comics. I don't care about comics, but I could relate to this person because they had that passion for that thing as well, you know?
Absolutely. Yes. It's you start to feel a love for it because it's contagious.
Yep. Yeah. It's
very interesting. Very interesting.
All right, James. Well, it's clear you have a passion for lifting and the old time lifts. Your Instagram is one of the most inspiring things, man. And
thanks.
You know, like I've gotten a few people saying, "Oh, the podcast gets me so psyched up to bend," and that's my ultimate goal with this. You know, it's just to like if I can motivate someone to go just do something that they enjoy, I'm good with that.
Oh, yeah.
So like when I scroll past your page, and you're doing all these wild lifts on a piece of plywood in your driveway, like, that makes me want to go lift.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. Well, you see someone like Don Cummings, who, how many red nails did he bend? Did he bend like 100 red nails?
102. Yeah.
100. Oh, yeah. 102. Yeah. It's just, it. In some ways, it's either going to do one of two things. Either I'm going to go out and tear up everything with my weights, or I'm going to sell them. Because I'm like, I'm done. Yeah. Like 102 red nails? Are you serious, dude? Did you leave any for the rest of us? Come on, Don. But yeah, he's great to watch. Or if you watch, Adam Glass do whatever Adam Glass does, which is just amazing.
Yeah.
Or who's the guy who goes by the name Canuck?
Oh, Chuck and Canuck.
Chuck and Canuck.
Josh Goldthorpe. Yep.
Goodness.
Rookie.
What is wrong with him? Is he not
of the year?
Has he not heard of internet porn? Hasn't he got something else better to do with his time? Goodness. He's
got awesome. The passion. Yeah. Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. So you just watch these guys. And the great thing about bending is, I remember Bill Starr talked about, Bill Starr. I love Bill Starr, but not Bill Starr. Bill Pearl, multi-time Mr. Universe. A guy that was so threatening that they banned NABA, North Atlantic Bodybuilding Association, folks from competing in the IFBB because they were afraid he was going to beat Arnold. That's how good he was.
Wow.
And he's still alive today. He's 80 years old now. About 90 years old. He just turned 90. And he talked about that the easiest thing was just bring in some license plates to rip and some steel spikes to bend to do an exhibition. He goes, you don't have to bring a weight set. You don't have to have them provide you with a weight set. So the great thing about bending and tearing steel and so on is it doesn't take up much space. It doesn't cost a lot, really.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Or Robert, I'm going to say his name wrong, but Robert Nedgley, is that how you say
Nedgley,
it?
Yeah.
Nedgley. And when what's he bending? Dimes now? I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Give me a break. Or at least he's getting a taco with a dime. Yep. I'm like, dude, really?
Yeah.
It's just awesome. It's just, but it's like back when, I don't know, back when Mikhail, Parrish, and Bird were destroying everybody when they were in the Celtics back in the 80s. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just like, nope. It's just, where do you go from there? You know,
yeah.
It's so inspiring what those guys do. I love it.
Yeah, it's cool to hear you have that respect for it too, because I know firsthand that they have the respect for what you're doing too, you know, and it's all related, like we were saying before the show.
Oh, yeah. And the pain it takes. I mean, you really got to face the pain and just ignore it.
Yeah. You know?
What's that? I think you remember Garrison Keillor of the Prairie Home Companion? Remember that show at all?
Yes.
Radio show?
Yep.
He would say, sometimes you have to look reality right square in the eye and deny it. You know, that's what you got to do with pain.
Yep. So tell me a little bit about your background and just how you came up in lifting and how you developed this true love for the old time lifts. And on another podcast, I remember you were talking about how many lifts there were at the turn of the century and how they've just been trimmed down to three.
Yeah. Well, two in weightlifting and three in powerlifting.
Mm-hmm.
Powerlifting didn't become a nationally organized sport here in the States until 1964. But I got started in sixth grade, would have been 1982 or so.
Okay.
So I would have been about 12 years old. And I was having some back problems. And now I know it was sciatica. But all I knew is I hurt. I would have to crawl around on the floor in the morning. And I figured, well, I need to get stronger. Not that I knew it could, I didn't think it was going to do me any good. I just thought I need to get stronger so I could be able to do things, go to work, because I had jobs as well as going to school.
Wow.
Not knowing that, hey, when you make something stronger, the pain goes away. What an idea. So the thing was bodybuilding was it though. I mean, there was no powerlifting back then for magazines.
Yeah.
So there was no weightlifting magazines on the news rack. So when you went to the newsstand at the grocery store or wherever, the drugstore, it was all bodybuilding. And this is Arnold was hitting his stride. And nobody made the bodybuilding lifestyle look more fun than Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah.
He was what Muhammad Ali was to boxing. He was what or is what Bruce Lee is to martial arts. You know, and Bruce Lee is actually a huge influence on my lifting, actually. But so you got into bodybuilding because that's all there was. Of course, the magazines at the time were promoting the machines, and I didn't have the machines, so I felt like I was kind of hamstrung on having the machines. But I did the best I could, and fortunately, the first instruction booklet was old enough that it still had a lot of those old lifts in it, like a Jefferson lift and a hack lift. So I've been doing those lifts over 35 years, and it kind of clicked. It's like, all right, here's a deadlift. That's a bar in front of you. All right, next time you're going to do a Jefferson lift, that's the bar between your legs.
Right.
And next time's a hack lift. That's the bar behind you. And it kind of just clicked. Oh, I can just do whatever. I don't always have to do everything with the bar right in front of me, you know? So that kind of right away said, you can do whatever. I did bodybuilding for about 20 years. Got into powerlifting after a divorce, kind of something to break out on my own and do something really different. And I was doing raw powerlifting for a few years. Decided I wanted to try some weightlifting. So I got into, I was 35, I think, when I got into competitive weightlifting. And at the same time, some local nut job, God bless him, he decided to start running strongman meets. So I also started competing in strongman at 35 years old. So, and I loved it. It was a lot of fun. So I started developing this idea that, you know, a little weightlifting is not going to hurt your powerlifting. And a little strongman isn't going to hurt either one of those. You know?
Right.
You know, and it's like Bruce Lee always talked about, weightlifting is expressing the body. You know, and I always liked that.
Yeah.
You know, I always thought that was pretty cool. And then, you know, I still wasn't into old-time stuff because the old-time strongman, oh, we used to do that. This is how things were. And we wore silly costumes. And we had handlebar mustaches. But we do things better now. It's like, no, actually, we don't. Because now we have to do all this mobility work that used to be built in.
Right.
But I didn't know that yet. And there's a pro strongman named George Olsen from Denmark. And Ironman magazine did a cover. Actually, had him on the cover, but they did a profile on him. And he was deadlifting over 700 pounds with just his middle finger. And so they gave you a way of doing a one-hand deadlift similar to how he was doing his middle finger deadlift. They weren't going to recommend you do a middle finger deadlift. And I remember I went and tried that with a dumbbell. And I have no idea if it did the effect that I wanted. It was supposed to help with building up your arms because it blew up my delts. It blew up my delts like nothing I'd ever done in my life. And that's when I was like, you know, maybe I need to start looking at this old-time strongman stuff.
Yeah.
And so it took me a couple of years because being online still wasn't common yet.
Right.
This was in the late 90s, early 2000s. But eventually I started getting online a bit and finding out there were places to compete in old-time strongman. And then I noticed that the competing is cool, but I'm noticing these lifts actually have some merit, you know? They build mobility and strength, you know? And that's kind of brought me up to today. I've just further explored it more and more. Started doing a lot of one-hand lifts, one-hand deadlifts, one-hand snatch, one-hand clean and jerk, and just realizing what it has to offer, you know? It's like, okay, we're missing out on a lot of athleticism and mobility. You know, there used to be no such thing as rotator cuff injuries, you know, and now there is.
Wow.
And if you look at a lot of the lifts we do today, they come from grappling and wrestling, you know, between squats. We got from the Steinborn lift, which was Henry Steinborn, who was a great wrestler, wrestled for 35 years professionally, I think. It was something ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know, and Arthur Saxon and George Hackenschmidt, not only were literally, I think Hackenschmidt was the first world champion wrestler, professional wrestler. So he and Saxon both won world championship wrestling titles and world champion weightlifting titles.
Wow.
You know, and I think they were both also quite into cycling at one point. They were cyclists, if I remember right.
No kidding.
It was a kind of a newer thing. And so a lot of these guys did gymnastics, They did a lot of kettlebell work. And they were strong and they were agile. They were the whole package, you know.
And, just a culture of physicality, you know.
Yeah, well, it was called physical culture.
Yeah.
And there's a reason for it. It really, they would do whatever they would do whatever would help them move better and do their sport better or enjoy their lives better, whatever you want to call it. But a lot of grappling, you know.
Well, something I really enjoy about your page and someone like Bud Jeffries or Adam Glass is the variety. Bud is, you know.
Bud's an animal. Bud's an apex. He's the apex of the apex of the apex predator animal. He's just, he's insane. I love him. I love him. He's so insane.
And you can see, same with you, same with Bud. Like, you can see that you guys are enjoying it while you're doing it. You know, it's like the variety. I love seeing that. You know, it's not just like grunting and squatting at, like, the same squat, you know, for the 60th year in a row or whatever. Like, the variety is really attractive to me. I've always been someone that's like, just gets a little bored with something, wants to put a twist on it, you know, and something that comes up on this show a ton. I think Don was the first one to say it, but we're all kind of saying it in the same way. It's just this pursuit of being strong in all angles, you know, like the functional strength, the farm strength, old man strength, call it whatever you want, but it's just like not linear strength. We're talking overall, like a wrestler.
Yeah. You know? Right. Yeah. Like, well, when I train people, my goal is that they can fall down and be okay.
Yeah.
Or they can have something fall on them and they're okay. Mm-hmm. They can quickly grab or slip or catch themselves. It's fine. They're ready for whatever, you know, and that's the goal, you know?
Yeah.
So, because most people, they just want to feel good and move good.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. They don't want to necessarily bench 400 pounds or squat 600 pounds or whatever. So don't try to get them to do that.
Right.
Get them as strong as possible. But a lot of the guys, you get them to a 315 bench, they're going to be happy.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
You know, you get them to a 400-pound squat, they're going to be happy. You
know? Without that.
Just so they can go do what they do with their families on the weekends and not get hurt. And they can keep doing that into their 60s.
Yeah.
Why not? Yeah. It's not that hard.
Definitely.
No, just, it's just, and I try to keep it simple. I try to tell people all the time, look, you barbell, good collars, a couple of adjustable dumbbells, 300, 400, 500 pounds of plates, whatever your goals are going to be. That's it. That's all you need, you know. It's safe, you know. If you have a rack, you're going to have a tendency, unless you've got a really good coach breathing down your neck, you're going to have a tendency to overload that thing. Over the Steinborn or a pullover and press, you have to earn that weight that you get to use.
Yeah.
You have to earn it. So if you're doing a Steinborn lift, which is where a barbell's on the ground, you tip up one end, you get under the bar, you rock it under your shoulders and squat. Well, you're not going to do that with four plates.
No.
You know, I've done it with floor plates, but I worked up to it.
Yeah.
And I noticed that with the old time lifts, they require more range of motion. They require more core strength. And you tend not to lift as heavy, but you get more developed. You know what I mean? You get balance, coordination, mobility, and strength. And that's what people want, you know?
Definitely.
So it's interesting. I think people are starting to realize, hey, I would just want to feel better.
Definitely. Well, you certainly see an increase in mobility coaches. I feel like they're blowing up online right now.
to balance
out all the heavy lifting.
Yeah, it's interesting. And you can use the weights to get really flexible. I can usually get people into splits with weights in about 15 minutes or so. You know, it doesn't take long.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't stay there because it takes time to reprogram. But each time you do that with the weights, it'll last longer and longer.
Yeah.
But it's something you're going to have to get stronger and stronger at.
Sure.
Until, like right now, I can get up in the morning and do splits right out of bed or bend over and put my palms flat on the floor with my legs straight. You know.
Nice.
but it's, and I just turned 49 last month. So it's just something you can easily do if you know how to do it.
Right. So how did steel bending play in to your own training, and how did it come up as you started researching the old time strongmen?
It came up out of curiosity. I just wanted to see what it was like, what kind of mental grit did it take? You know, I like the challenge of it, and it's one thing to look at a plate, a barbell and some plates or a dumbbell, and you go like, okay, I know it's going to take about this much to do this with it. But you're looking at a cold piece of steel and it don't care. And it's kind of like when you're not sure if the wife's mad at you or not, and she ain't giving you any clues. That's what a cold piece of steel is.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to grit my teeth and get it done.
Yeah.
And so sometimes I would do it for conditioning. I would get a long piece and I'd spend 20, 25 minutes working on it, scrolling, trying to get it tighter and tighter. You know, I actually think I got a video of me doing that on YouTube. I'm just scrolling and keep trying to scroll it.
Yeah.
Or I'll play with the rebar and just work on it for 10 minutes for conditioning. And other was to see the pain of it. You know, how much pain did it take to make a piece of steel yield?
Yeah.
Kind of a funny story. Now it is. It wasn't. I got to the point that I could bend 60D or 60 penny nails fairly easily. You know, without a warm up, I could just, you know, take me less than 10 seconds. So I'd go through a bag of nails and I'd go to a hardware store, buy a bag of nails. So I went to this local hardware store one day, met up with a friend of mine. I was going to show off how good I'd got. I don't know what they had done to those nails, but they were not like the other 60 nails I've been playing with.
Yep.
I pulled a tendon in my index finger on the outside. Ooh. Took forever to heal. You know, I'm like, you jackass, you should know better than going. But everything else had been fine. I've been to a dozen other places and it's always been the same. But for some reason, this one store had these just, I don't know where they came from, but it's the only store I go to now to buy nails.
Nice.
You know what I mean? Because once I got those, you got to move up, you know?
Yep.
So, I like the pain of it. It really makes you tough. You know what I mean?
Definitely.
I know that sounds kind of silly, but it's probably with grappling too. Like there are times you got to know you can fight through something.
You know? Oh, 100%. You know, it's my wife laughs because it's like, she's like, everything that you really love, like hurts you in some kind of way. Like, prior to jiu-jitsu, my love, I was I still skateboard, but I was like fully in with skateboarding, jumping downstairs, jumping on rails, the whole thing. Like, and I quit all sports in ninth grade because of it. I regret that now, but you know, I was fully in with this, and similar to all the other stuff I've gotten into. So there's always been some type of toughness, pain tolerance situation going on.
I think men need that. I think I think we're designed to kind of get wound up and either protect the clan or protect the family. Mm.
And if you're not getting it, that's when you find some guys that are posturing and trying to prove, like they're just so unsure of if they have what it takes that they're just, you know, it's like just emanating from them that they don't, you know?
Yeah. Well, my father was in the special forces.
All right.
You would never know.
Right.
By the time you find out, it's too late. You know?
Yeah.
Just one of the nicest guys. Kids love him. Kids always want to come up to him and play with him and stuff. And he's just a really nice guy. You know, he's got nothing to prove. Mm. You know,
sure.
So, but that's how people are that know what they're doing.
Yep.
You know, so it's you're broadcasting the lack of penal ability and your insecurity quite loud and clear when you posture like that.
Yep.
And take for one.
If someone did some more grappling or even some more nail bending or heavy lifting and stuff, like just something that's a struggle, that would definitely ease some of that, you know?
I would think your shoulder gets tired from carrying a chip on it all the time.
I'm sure it does.
Jeez, guys.
Yeah.
And that's the great thing. You meet any of the really, anyone who's really great at this stuff. All the women, all the men that are really great at any of this. They're just regular, awesome people.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And it's so funny. Like when you deal with a beginner and they're giving it their best, that's awesome. I got nothing more to ask of you. If you're giving it your best, I don't care if it's 1,000 pounds or 10 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
Killing yourself, knocking yourself out, trying to be the best you can be. Isn't that inspiring?
Sure. So what's a normal training week look like for you these days? Do you plan in advance, or is it just a completely by feel type of thing? And what kind of goals are you chasing these days?
I'm waiting until the scamdemic or the plandemic is over, and that we can start doing weightlifting meets in person again. I won't do one online. I'm old.
Yeah.
we grew up doing things as a group together. You know what I mean?
Right.
So if I'm going to do a meet, I'm going to travel out of state or in state, whatever, but I'm going to travel, meet up with other people who also were so much in love with it that they traveled to come to it.
Right.
You know, there's something to that. But I'll compete in weightlifting as soon as it's available again. You know, basically I do weightlifting training 3 days a week. And then every other day or the days in between that, I will do either heavy get-ups, one-hand get-ups.
Nice.
Or heavy bent presses. And then to balance out clean and jerks, I do a lot of, I have a workout of pullover and press.
Yeah.
So it's 6 workouts that I either get done in 1 week or a week and a half,
mm-hmm.
you know, depending on how I feel and everything else. But so it's not that it's structured, but I'm really trying to just work on getting stronger with the get-ups, the bent presses, and trying to get the pullover and press kind of up close to what my clean and jerk numbers are.
Nice.
And so that's it right there. I've switched over to a split style on the snatch. Even though I probably give up a few kilos, I don't care. I'm 49. I don't think I'm a threat to anybody at the Nationals, the Pan Americans, or the Olympics.
Yeah.
So by doing the split style, it gives me foot speed, timing, coordination, mobility.
Yeah.
I'm still squat cleaning. So why not make your snatches a split style to get that extra mobility work and foot speed?
Yeah.
I find that as I get older, all the stuff they told me about that's a result of being old or getting older, it's crap. I'm 49. And if I moved half as much as I did at 25, I wouldn't have half the mobility issues or the creaky joint issues or getting out of bed is hard or up off the couch is difficult.
Yeah.
It's crap.
Yeah.
Think about back when you were skateboarding. If you're doing right now, right today, if you started doing half the stuff you used to do back when you were skateboarding, you'd probably drop 5 pounds in a week. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You'd probably burn a lot of calories. You'd be moving a lot more, and you wouldn't be feeling as much age as you may feel now.
Yeah.
And it's just, so I don't think it's as much getting older as it is. You just don't have the same moving habits as you used to have.
Right. Definitely. So about the get-ups, that's been, to certain people that I've talked to, especially in the world of jiu-jitsu and grappling in general, many people have said that if you could only do one exercise, they would recommend get-ups with weight, just because they think it's just so beneficial. So I'd like you to just like dive into that a little deeper. Is that what you're using for your like conditioning, or what's your motivation with doing those every other day?
Well, the get-up and the bent press kind of feed each other.
Mm.
They help each other out. They both require a lot of shoulder strength, a lot of rotator cuff strength, and a lot of mobility. And so the getup that I'm doing requires more time under tension and for the shoulder. And so it gives me a chance to really solidify and shore up that shoulder to have the endurance for a heavy bent press. Mm. Ronnie Collins back in 1949 in Long Beach, California, did a one-hand getup with a 265-pound barbell. So there's huge potential there.
Yeah.
So you could potentially do body weight on a one-hand getup if you wanted to. Bent pressing used to be in excess of the clean and jerk. You would bent press more than what you could clean and jerk.
Wow.
So I use those two to kind of feed each other and to keep my lateral mobility, my side-to-side movement open. So my thoracic spine, my glute medius, my quadratus lumborum, all the muscles on the side of me that I want to stay open.
Yeah.
The one-hand get-up and the bent press really help with that a lot, actually.
Nice.
And I came up with a seated version of the bent press a few months ago. That's really been helpful too.
I definitely saw that. Yeah, cool.
Yeah. That's very hard, but it's so, you know, I rotate stuff around. You do the same thing. The same lift's going to quit at the same point every time, right? If you're doing back squats, it's going to fail at the same point. So doing more back squats isn't going to fix that weak point.
Right.
So I'll find a different type of squat. Usually what I'll do is I do a squat for 2 weeks and then I'll do, or two workouts, and then I'll go to a one leg, like a step up or a lunge or a split squat for 2 weeks, and then go back to some type of front squat or overhead squat or whatever. Mm-hmm. Because when you're doing a squat, you're going to be limited by the weaker leg. Mm-hmm. The stronger leg always carries the weaker leg.
Yep.
You know, so I use the squats more to build up my torso strength, my stability of holding a heavy weight overhead or on the front of my shoulders on the back. And then I use the lunges, the split squats, and so on to build up the actual leg strength. Mm. Does that make sense, or am I talking crap?
No, it does. Okay. It does. And then something you touched on there in the stability for the squat, something that I'm finding and the guys that I look to as coaches that are always stressing to me is just body tension, you know, and that's
sure.
That's something that is so key in steel bending. It's just for like the braced bending and the leg crushing. I feel like the more tense I can make my body, just the more power I have to bend the steel. So,
well, I'm gripping the floor with my feet. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's no way I'm going to bend anything if I'm not gripping the floor and like cramping the muscles in my feet, trying to like dig into the floor. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're going to brace, man. I mean, it's called a braced bend for a reason. You got to brace everything, man.
Yeah.
you know, and sometimes when I'm bending, you know, the piece is in my hands, but I'll get cramps in my groin from just, you know what I mean? It's just, man, you've got to put everything into it.
Is there any like
kind of like?
I like what you said. Sorry,
it's kind of like breaking a board. You know how you put all your focus into breaking a board. Mm-hmm. I mean, I haven't done it, so I probably should shut up and stop talking. But similar idea of trying to break a piece of steel or bend a piece of steel. You're taking your whole body and trying to channel all your chi, all your energy into that one moment. You know. What were you going to say? I'm sorry.
No, it's no problem. Sorry. I like what you said about gripping the floor with your feet. Are there any other mental or physical cues that you do? It might be so instinctual for you at this point. It's hard to articulate, but that would be beneficial for people to hear, like in creating body tension.
The question I get all the time is about breathing and how to prep your breath. Mm. Before you exert. And I'm like, well, you ever had your buddies messing around with you and one of them goes to throw you a gut shot, but they're not going to do it, but they're just making you flinch. You know how you, like that, you breathe in real quick and you tense? That's how you lift.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
Right. That's it. Just a quick, like somebody's going to hit you in the gut, but they're not, but you don't know they're not going to. And you just do a quick little, you know. Unless it's the Conan's wheel, and then you're on your own because there's just no way to live or breathe during a Conan's wheel. It's just the worst thing in the world.
I don't even know what that is.
that's in Strongman.
Oh, okay.
The Conan's wheel event is just the worst, trying to breathe, okay. Like whatever. You're just
gotcha.
It's just the absolute worst.
I'm
just
gonna look that up after we're done.
Well, it's basically like a 4 or 5, maybe even a 6-inch axle.
Okay.
You know, on a pivot, and you're walking in a circle. It's from movie. Yeah, it's from Conan
with Arnold Schwarzenegger. I have seen that. I just didn't know the term. Okay.
Yeah, the Conan's wheel. So
wow,
it's the worst, dude.
So how about grip strength? I know you mix that into, is that every other day thing, or how are you mixing that into the workouts?
It's probably into every workout some way or another. Mm-hmm. I use it with clients to modulate intensity. I don't let anyone use straps, and I don't let them use a hook grip until I tell them it's time to use a hook grip.
Nice.
And so that means they're limited by their grip. That's fine.
Yeah.
It's okay if it takes you a couple extra weeks. Listen, we don't need to make the fastest weight increases possible for regular everyday people. If it takes them twice as long as what it takes people like you and I to make the 5-pound, 10-pound gains on their bent rows, who cares? They don't. Mm-hmm. So if I can give them more time of doing more reps with perfect technique, why not?
Yeah.
So let the grip limit them. Why not? You know?
Yeah.
So I was doing weightlifting tonight. I was doing cleans. I worked up to 2.25, and I don't use a hook grip on my weightlifting. None of my weightlifting is hook grip. It's all double overhand.
Nice.
So what if I got to do an extra set to make up for some volume that I could have gotten if I wore straps? Who cares?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, because what happens when you try to go for that extra 2 reps? Your form starts to go to shit.
Yeah.
So what if we instead just didn't use the straps and did 1 or 2 extra sets to make up the difference? Who cares?
Yeah.
But you'd be reinforcing some good reps, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it is a gateway to strength. I will say it is a gateway to strength. I had this driven home to me. I hadn't done a strongman meet in 5 years, and a buddy called me up the night before a meet and said, can you come down and compete? Because it's all new kids. There's no veterans that are going to compete. We need someone who's been around a while. I'm like, okay. It was 42 at the time or something. And I hadn't touched a stone. I hadn't touched a farmer's handle implement in 5 years or something stupid. You know, and but when it came time to load the Atlas stone, it felt the 215, I remember, felt like I could spin it on my finger because I've been working a lot of grip in the past 5 years. I've really intensified my grip, and I was like, huh. So that's when I realized that it's a gateway to strength. Like, it doesn't matter if you grab onto someone grappling, or if I grab on even squatting. If you and I woke up tomorrow and our grip was 10% stronger, and you were going to go grapple, and I was going to go squat, you and I are both going to have a great session.
Yeah.
Because with a 10% stronger grip, you can manipulate your opponent that much easier.
No doubt. No doubt.
And even if I can, because Ed Cohn will talk about, Ed Cohn is one of the greatest powerlifters of all time, just so we're all clear. he was talking about, you want to try to bend the bar down around your back on squat. It's like a pull down.
Wow.
And just make it one with you. Become one with that weight. And if your grip is strong, man, you know, whenever you try to pick something up and it feels heavy, where does it feel heavy? In your elbows? Your knees? Or do you feel it in your hands? We're picking up with our hands. So if our first sense of something is, that isn't that heavy, what are we going to do mentally? We're going to attack it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I would assume same thing with grappling. If you feel like you can take that guy and you can wag him around all day,
huge mental edge.
You already know who's going to win that match.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, so I do whatever I can. I do a lot of hub lifting, do a lot of plate pinching, but I also just make sure, well, except for I just cleaned the inch dumbbell, but I had straps on because I can't pick it up barehanded yet.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm like, why wait until I can pick it up barehanded? Why not practice cleaning it beforehand?
Nice.
So certain situations, yes. And you're still working your grip, whether you're strapped in or not.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I love towel pull-ups. I'm sure you probably have done gi pull-ups,
right? Yeah.
Something like that.
And a towel work, too, yeah.
Yeah, and man, you know, so again, it's just how we dive into anything, whether it's benching, grappling, squatting, snatching, is with our hands. So implement it any way you can, man, you know?
Yeah. So you said sometimes it's a week, sometimes it's a week and a half. So I'm guessing there's some days you're taking off. That's something I struggle with personally, like we talking about at the top, yeah, with the passion, you know, when you love something, sure, you want to, sure, do it all the time. And when you, sure, get results, you want to do it all the time. But
sure,
I felt with bending, I just had to take a full week straight off. Nothing, no lifting, no bending. No, I was so,
man,
I just had nothing left in my tank. So let's talk a little bit about recovery and drop some wisdom on recovery and nutrition, if you got it.
Lots of protein, lots of water, and eat enough carbs to do what you need to do. That's it. It's just fuel, you know? There's nothing like a good long walk. Go for 15 minutes, a couple of times a day.
Yeah.
Get stuff flowing, man. Just get flowing, you know? And sometimes I'll go for a walk and I'll find myself where there's some rocks, and all of a sudden a not workout situation becomes a workout situation.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, well, you know, so like the best workouts I ever had were where I felt like crap. Like the first world record I ever broke was a workout I almost didn't take because I just felt like crap. It'd been a long day at work. It's in the middle of the winter. It'd been dark since 3 p.m. It was now 6 p.m. when I got home from work. I said, you know what, dude, just go out and do something. I'm like, well, I'll go work on this lift. I've been playing around with it. It's one of the first old time lifts that I've been really got into. And I had a knack for it. It's one of the few that it's actually come kind of easy to me. And so when you take the pressure off, I'm like, just get the blood flowing. So you play around with it for a few minutes. And that's not too bad. So you throw a little more weight on. You're like, that's feeling pretty good, you know, because there's no pressure. You've taken the expectation, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
The next thing you know, I'm like, world record is 319, and I've got 344 on here.
Wow.
Huh. And you nail the 344. But if you'd gone in saying you had to do that, it wouldn't happen.
Right.
So if I could tell you, recommend anything, I would say almost all of the best workouts I ever had were the ones I almost didn't take.
Really?
Because I was just feeling like, yeah, I'm telling you, like out of 100, I would say 98 of them were ones that I was like, I'm dead. I don't care. I hate everything right now. And I'm just like, dude, just don't be an idiot. Go do something. There are people that can't walk and you're gonna whine and complain that you can't train. And just go do something. I'll guilt myself if I got it. Whatever I got to do.
Yeah.
I'll guilt myself. Why don't you go to the nurse, you know?
What's your thinking about overtraining and that kind of stuff, though? Like, do you believe in just sometimes just taking a walk that day, or are you always doing it? Like, because that's what I'm trying to find the fine line between. Like, I know I have, or I'm speaking personally, but I know talked to plenty of guys that are in the same boat. You know, we're all a little mentally crazy and mentally tough, you know, obviously we're spending this time lifting weights and bending steel and all that. So it's you don't want to reach a point where the returns are diminishing because you're just grinding yourself so hard, you know, and that's what I'm trying to figure out. Like, I'm trying to take the rest and the recovery as serious as I'm taking the pursuit of it, you know?
Well, I could go a couple of ways with this. If you get a chance, look up powerlifter from the 1980s called Jeff Magruder.
Okay.
Jeff Magruder purposely did overtraining, overreaching, whatever you want to call it, because he believed if he did just enough overtraining and he backed off at the right time, he would get a rebound effect. So I think if you can plan on, like, if you know, you have to fit your psychology. I don't care what anyone says. The best program is the one you're going to stay on. I don't care if it's training. I don't care if it's diet. If you're, I don't care how good it is. If you hate it, you're not going to stay on it.
Okay.
And that's what I have to do with clients. I have to help them find what they like.
Sure.
You know, up to a point. I mean, some stuff you're going to have to do, but you gotta give them enough stuff because they're not athletes. They're not passionate about it, but they're passionate about feeling better. And whatever you can do to help them feel better and move better.
Sure.
Now we got common ground. Now we can get them to do some crazy stuff. So if you're passionate about something, you can do a lot more training. Like people have said, how do you train grip 5 days a week? I'm like, I like it. I really like it. Like, I'll try to make myself not do it, and I'll be out there doing something at some
point. Yeah, yeah.
So I have to have a talk with myself and say, okay, dude, you're going balls deep on training this week. You've trained. Sometimes I've trained 7 days in a row on grip. And I'm like, you know what's coming. So just be honest with yourself. Say, you know, next week's going to be a little rough. So if you only get 3 grip workouts in next week, you got 7 in this week. So get over it. Stop being greedy. So I think you got to work with yourself, and you're going to be honest with yourself and say, come on, dude, really?
You know? So just a managing of expectations, sort of.
I think so. I think being honest with yourself. Is it really fair? Is it really fair to expect your kid to be awesome at school every single day, day in and day out? Or is it more realistic to say, kids are human too. They can have good days and they can have bad days.
Yeah, yeah.
So just, it's like Charles Poliquin, rest in peace. God bless him. I love Charles Poliquin. You a fan of his?
I don't know strength who that coach? Is either, man. I'm writing strength down coach. A lot of names here.
Yeah, no, that's okay. Charles Poliquin, great guy. Just passed away relatively recently. And he talked about that discipline is bullshit. And it's one of my favorite. Yeah, he was on a Mark Bell podcast. I hope I can say that without getting anyone upset. But he was talking about discipline is bullshit. And everyone's like, what are you talking about? Now, Charles has worked with Olympic athletes.
Wow.
He goes, look. He goes, they do what they do because they love it. There's no amount of me guilting them or yelling at them or shaming them or whatever. He goes, they do it because they love it. He goes, one of my girls, she won a gold medal. We're celebrating. And later on that night, she's like, hey, coach, you got my new program? He's like, you just won the Olympics today. She goes, yeah, and I want another one. So have you got that program ready yet? He goes, what? Are you kidding? He goes, you can't make people. You can't discipline people into that attitude.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think there has to be a reckoning on your part, on my part, as to how much you love something. Mm. You know what I mean? I have to look at some goals I've set, and I have to realize how much I really don't love it. It would be cool to do, but do I love it?
Interesting.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There are other goals that I don't really have to talk about much because I know it's going to happen. Come hell or high water, I love doing this thing over here. It's going to happen.
Uh-huh.
So I think we have to, again, I think it's the relationships we have with others, just like the relationships we have with ourselves. We have to be fair with ourselves.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's okay if you don't, you can have 26 goals and you can have 5 of them that are always going to be red hot. Fine. You're going to get those done no matter what. And it's okay that the other ones aren't necessarily all red hot and just, on fire. You go to bed thinking about it. You wake up thinking about it.
Yeah.
And that's good because I wouldn't want 26 things driving me crazy thinking about anyways.
Yeah.
But does it make sense what I'm saying? And
it
I hope I'm answering your questions. I'm trying
that's
to.
Great. It's a cool perspective.
I think we have to be fair. And something I never do, and I don't know if I talk about this much, but I always say to my body when it's time for a lift I've never done before to break a PR, I'm like, hey man, let's just do this. I never like force it. This is what's going to happen. I don't want to create a contradictory or a conflict. I mean, I don't want to create a conflict between mind and body.
Wow.
We're a team. We're together. So come on, man. Wouldn't that be cool if we did this lift? Wouldn't that be
That's
awesome?
Cool.
You know how good that's going to feel? Let's do this, you know?
Yeah.
That may sound a little foofy and out there, but I've learned you must have a good relationship with yourself. You must you must reduce all conflict to create as much positivity between mind and body to work together towards the goal. You know?
I love that. And that plays right into bending. And that's actually...
Sure.
In the realm of something that comes up pretty often, I'll just get into it brief because I mentioned it on a lot of other episodes. But so in my experience in jiu-jitsu, that's a pure love, right? Like I'm like fully, I couldn't be happier when I'm on the mat, you know, like it doesn't matter how hard the training is there. Right. It could be the seventh day in a row of like the hardest training, and I'd sit there in a pool of sweat, just being like, "This is the best. This is the best."
Oh yeah,
you know. Yeah. So there wasn't a real lot of like aggressive. It's aggressive by nature, but there wasn't a lot of like anger within me for that.
No.
When I came over to the strength stuff, I thought I had to be mad and angry, like to try to be strong, right? And then Bud Jeffries, when he was on, he set me straight with that. He was just like, "Man, you love this stuff too. You love jujitsu. It's all the same." And it's basically what you're saying here is like a harmony of mind and body. Instead of being like, "You're gonna do this, you little bitch," like you're gonna be like, "No, you know, like talking." Nope. I like that, man. I think that's a key to some strength.
Of course, that's different in a meet setting. I will say that's a little different in a meet setting. I'm not someone you want to talk to probably a week before a meet. And I get into a certain place in my head that you don't. I just won't say a lot because it'll be bad if I do. So about a week before the meet, I get pretty internal and I get a good rage going, and it just it just happens. I can't explain it, but it's just different. Now the meet day itself, I'm very happy because it's a chance to release that energy. You know, and I love and hate meets all at the same time, because I love everything about the meet, except the one thing is every meet I've ever done has screwed up a great training cycle.
Yeah.
You know, training will be going great. I kind of wish the meet would get canceled so I could continue this great training cycle.
Yeah.
And I always get all, because I create exercises almost every day. I come up with new lifts to do or new exercises to do almost daily, sometimes multiple times a day.
That's awesome.
And well, it is, unless you're prepping for a meet, because then you can't mess around.
You gotta
work on what you gotta work
stick
on.
Stick to the program.
Well, you gotta fix what's weak.
Yeah.
You know. So But most of the time, it's a very complementary, helping the body, helping the mind.
That's cool.
Because you realize that the body's been ready for a while. It's just the mind that hasn't caught up yet.
Right.
You know, like Lee Haney is the only undefeated 8-time Mr. Olympia. And he said, the body won't go where the mind hasn't already gone first.
Wow.
You know, it's true.
Yeah.
You know, so you have to, and I can't remember, was it Travis Mash? Who's a former power lifter, and he's now a weightlifting coach, but I believe it was Travis Mash, and I hope he doesn't beat me up if I'm using his name and I shouldn't be. But he was talking about that the visual way we are today with YouTube and Facebook and everything.
Yeah.
He's having a hard time getting athletes that can actually visualize.
Interesting.
Because it's been done for them. They've grown up without having to visualize it.
Okay.
Which is really interesting because, you know, when I grew up, we didn't have a phone in my house till I was 7. Wow. And that's only because my aunt got it. Before, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, entertainment was on your own.
Sure.
But visualization, I'm sure, is important with grappling.
You know? Oh, no doubt about it. It comes up a lot on the show, but like, I've got myself to where, like, you know, it was jujitsu, now it's strength stuff and steel bending, but I think about this stuff so intensely that I dream about it, man. Like I really all the time. Oh, yeah. Like, and when I'm falling, that's usually when I'm doing my visualization, but I'm big into that, especially when I'm getting ready to compete. Like I'm just get to a place where I can almost like smell the mat, you know? It's great.
I've been thinking of getting into grappling when I turn 50. I was thinking of doing that. Just something fun and different to do. Something different to express the body.
Yeah. Well, hit me up. I know some academies there in Maine. I've looked them up when I've been up there on vacation. So I know the lay of the land up there.
Yeah. I figure if I keep my mobility where I need it to be and I keep my strength where I need it to be, I should be all right.
Nice.
You know, enough that I don't get hurt.
Sure.
You can do whatever you want as long as you're prepared.
Yep. Yeah. So talking about getting hurt and avoiding it, Adam Glass, his question for you was, What are some recommendations for shoulder mobility when people are doing a lot of double overhand bending and they're just getting that to avoid injury with that style?
Kelly Snatch, okay. which he has become a fan of. I helped him with that. And that's with the bar behind your body. You can start with a broomstick.
Yeah.
And it looks like you're going to do a hack lift, but actually you just flip it up and over.
Sure.
And you finish with your leg straight.
Okay.
I would imagine pullovers, like doing the pullover, laying across the bench and doing pullovers, probably with a barbell instead of one dumbbell. Mm-hmm. Probably a barbell or a dumbbell in each hand would help open up the shoulders.
Nice.
And because you're going to get a lot of crunch of your lats, subscap, pec major, and pec minor. You're going to get a lot of crunch in there. So pullovers, I think, would help a lot. And I started doing an exercise I came up with a few months ago. It was I lay on my side and do pullovers. So I'm laying on this side,
okay,
horizontally or roughly, maybe at an incline. And I have a dumbbell and I let it come down and go behind the head.
Oh, wow.
And come up, let it come over and then press.
Nice.
I'll link you some videos when we're okay. done.
Yeah, I'll post them. Let's get
but,
to it. Got a couple those, other questions for you.
Yeah, I think those three should be a good start at getting your shoulders open. Definitely.
Okay. All right. And then Don asked about just general lifts and exercises that are good for bending power. So like if your focus is solely to be a strong steel bender, what kind of lifts are you recommending?
If you have access to a gym or a pulley machine, what I used to do, you know what an upright row is, right?
Yes.
Like that. Well, I will go to a pulley machine with the bar and I will push down. You can't bend it, right?
Mm.
But I will push down and I'll really focus on following through with my body, not just with my arms, but I'll lean forward with my abs, getting everything into that bar as if I'm trying to bend it.
Even though nice. I can. Yeah.
Does that make sense? Or does that sound like sense. Crap?
Okay. No.
And of course, dips are always good.
Yeah.
Dips are always good for bending. Oh, huh. Yeah. Yeah. And then that, I don't know, that bending curl I sent you with the towel and the scale
yeah.
weight.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's funny because people, I'll even say in the description that, you know, just something to practice or give you a rough idea of what it feels like. And someone invariably will always say, well, steel is how you practice bending when you bend steel. I'm like, I know that. This is just something to help you out.
Yeah.
Because if you think about it, if you use a towel, it's going to spread the stress rather than having it in one point. So it could be something that allows you to work the motion high reps, get some blood in there, get your restoration without putting a lot of stress in one area.
Yeah.
So.
All right. Another person from Instagram said, thoughts on minimalist garage setups and safety while training heavy solo.
I've been doing that all my life. So I'm down with it.
No rack equals more safety, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's. I mean, everything they've given you, uprights on the bench and squat stands and power racks, was to use more weight. It was never invented as a safety feature. Like the first power racks and squat stands were for the Olympic team back in 1928. It was for them to save energy and to be able to squat more rather than doing the signboard lift. It had nothing to do with safety. All this stuff became safety orientated when it became time to sell it. Because I can make people buy stuff if I tell them they're going to be safe.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so it's, and I guarantee you, you're going to want an athlete that can steinboard 400 over an athlete that can squat 500 off the rack. Mm-hmm. Anyone that can take 400, tip it up, drop it on their back or tip it over on their back.
Yeah.
Squat it and then put it back down the same way. They're going to have a lot of core strength, which I would imagine would help with grappling as well. I would
assume. Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt. And you sort of touched on it before, but as far as like a minimal setup for somebody, you're just talking barbell, weights.
A barbell, adjustable dumbbells, a barbell, some really good collars, good quality collars, and 300, 400, 500 pounds of weight. You're good to go, man. I mean, you could probably train. I mean, if you're looking for a 500-pound Steinborn lift, a 650-pound deadlift, maybe 350 on a clean and jerk. I mean, you don't need anything but a bar and some plates, dude.
Yeah.
You're going to get strong all over. And the thing that nobody realizes, well, the people I train, because I don't usually let them use a rack, at first they're scared of it. And then they really like the challenge of it. And then they get over to this point of like, you know, if I go on vacation somewhere and all they get is a barbell, I don't care. I'm all set. Sure. So now they feel empowered.
Yeah.
Because they realize I don't need all this equipment.
Wow.
I'm good. And so that's really exciting because you help them realize. Yeah. So yeah, it's instead of worrying about it, now they're excited about it, you know? So, and again, there's a sense of accomplishment when it's just like earning stripes. Yep. Earning your stripes on your belt. If you earn the weight on your back, like when you go into the gym and you put 400 on your back that you picked up off the floor, you earn that weight. You're the only person in there that earned the right to squat that weight.
Yeah.
Anybody can put a bar on the rack and load it up with whatever weight you want.
Yeah.
And because you worked up to that 400, your reps, you're going to do full reps. You're not going to do any half reps because you're always going to use an appropriate weight. You're always going to hold back. I hold back. I've done up to 430 that way. I probably could have done 450.
Yeah.
But because you hold back a few pounds, there's no excuse to not get full reps, full range of motion. And if you're supposed to do six reps, you should be doing six reps. There's no excuse.
Yeah.
It really kind of holds you to the fire, so to speak. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think it's, and again, that's pretty much why I think it's safe training,
you know? Yeah,
because you're limited by your fear.
Gotcha.
You know?
Yeah.
So
that's good.
Somebody,
that's a good thing.
Somebody, yes, it is. Somebody had asked me, they messaged me for the show. They said, you know, about new lifts, how do I approach new lifts? And it was a really good question because I never really thought about it. I think I get so excited. I'm sure if somebody comes in from another school and says, hey, I got this move and it's this. And you're like, I have not seen what. Yeah. Come, you know, I'm sure you're not even thinking about how to approach it. You're like, you know, hurry up and put that choke on me or put that hold on me. I want to see what it's like. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
To me, it's kind of like dating someone, getting into a new relationship. You know, you got to feel it out.
Uh-huh.
Does she think this kind of humor is funny? Does she think this kind of food is good? Does she like it? Does she like it when you do this? Does she like it when you do that? And I think that's how I assess new lifts. As I look at, I try not to presuppose too much. You know what I mean? I'm sure you find that in grappling too, that if something new comes up, you don't want to write the script before you even know what the story is. You know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah.
Like take it in, let it tell you what it is, you know, like when I started doing one hand snatches, and one hand clean and jerks, I was trying to write the script without knowing the story. And I was trying to move up and down because that's what I'm used to doing with a regular snatch and a regular clean and jerk. Well, with a one hand lift, you can move up and down, left to right to get around that bar. So what's just like if you were holding a sword with two hands, one on each end versus just on one end, which one's going to give you more movement?
Mm-hmm.
Same thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, you gotta just be open to it. Don't presuppose what it is. Just say, oh, I'm going to give it a try. You know, you can read up on it if you want, but unfortunately there's a lot of crap online.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like if this matters to you, when I'm talking on my Instagram page or Facebook page or whatever, my research material, my books go back to the 1880s.
Wow. Okay?
So when I'm talking to anyone about bent pressing or one hand snatching or whatever, I'm probably talking about somebody whose book I have or an article they wrote from their perspective. I'm not just, like, I see a lot of people online trying to do historical strength stuff, and they're just copying what someone else online wrote that's wrong. And I don't care about dates. I don't care about what date that, I don't care. It doesn't matter. But sure, describing a lift incorrectly can get somebody hurt.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And to lose the flavor of where that lift came from can get somebody hurt.
Yeah. You know?
So I pretty much don't copy anything offline. It's all original source material. You know, I have magazines and books going, well, the magazines go back to the 1930s, and then the books go back to the 1880s, I think.
Wow.
So
it's awesome.
But it's no different with grappling. I'm sure there's plenty of research, historical material, that you're better off going straight to the source.
Definitely. So I got two more things I want to touch on before we start wrapping up.
Sure.
One is isometric training. Your thoughts on that, and does it play a role in your own training? That comes up on the show a lot, and I'd like your thoughts on that.
Yes, it does. As Norbert Szymanski, who's probably one of our greatest weightlifters, said, they asked him if he ever did isometrics. He goes, "Yeah, whenever I miss a lift."
That's what we say about bending. Like, when the bar doesn't move, it's just isometric.
Yeah, that's isometric. Yeah. So you can either plan on it, or you can let it happen whenever it happens. Luke Raymond, I don't know if you're familiar with Jed Johnson's and Luke Raymond, both great guys. I love going to meets where they're running the meet. I love them. Jed Johnson, Luke Raymond. I can't, and I won't say anything bad about those two. And great guys and great competitors, and they're really strong and they're really nice guys. And I've resisted an idea that Luke told me about, because I know I'm an idiot about certain things. You have to know if you're an idiot about certain things. So right now I'm practicing putting weight on a scale, a weight that I can't lift. And then I pull on it, and I make sure I can't see what the scale says. I have my camera film the scale readout. So I just focus on the pull. You know, like, one of my favorite techniques, I love lifting with my eyes closed, because that's when you take in all kinds of information. You know?
Yeah.
It's helped me with a lot of clients. I just tell them to close their eyes. And like, I'll catch you if you're going to fall. They're not going to fall. But it's like, if you close your eyes, you can all of a sudden feel all kinds of stuff you didn't know you had.
That's awesome. Yeah.
That's going on. You know, like, I had a friend of mine, actually a girlfriend that was a grappler, and she said that she did better with her eyes closed.
Yeah, I've heard that.
You know, and so it's just really, you know, it's just so many, there's so many places to take information from, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But so I've been doing that. I've been working on just pulling and pulling and pulling, which is isometric.
Yeah.
And so I'm just doing that once a week, seeing, do I need to do it two times a week, three times a week, once a week? You know what I mean? But it's, the nice thing about isometric for me is it really teaches me to take take extra moments to really connect with that and dig deep. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And it, because we, movement happens, the range of motion happens so quickly, you know? So, like, I think pause squats are great.
Yeah, sure.
Like, I like to pause squat for maybe 10 seconds to really get a feel for it, you know, and then come up.
Yeah.
You know, well, if you're gonna pause and pause, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, isometrics, it's definitely, I think it can really help you make that mind muscle connection, because you're staying in that one area and giving it attention.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
So do you like using isometrics?
I've been working them in a little bit. Bud had a lot of great stuff to say about them. Don too. And one of my strength coaches, Scott Shetler, has talked about it too. Just like, if you're doing it on the bench, you know, setting pins and stuff, so you're locked out here, then you're locked out there, then you're locked, you know, like, incremental.
Yep.
And certainly in bending, you know, if I take something I know I'm nowhere near bending yet, and I just lay into it with everything I have and hold it for as long as I can, you know, that's certainly beneficial. Like, some steel won't move till you're holding it for 10 seconds, I'll tell you.
Sometimes I'll jump into a bend. Like I'll have something like a nail.
Yeah.
And I'll jump up in the air and land. And when I land, I put all that energy of the landing into the nail.
Yeah.
It sounds crazy. I get it. If you want to delete that part of this, I don't blame you.
It's all right.
But I'm taking that energy from leaping up and coming down and just driving and just trying to focus everything into that, you know. Or sometimes it helps if I put an elastic band around my hands and the elastic band cuts off some of the circulation and makes my hands swell.
Oh, okay.
It gives me a cushion with the pain a little bit, but it also gives me a little more surface area.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'll use it with grip training and nail bending.
Wow.
Not super tight, but just enough to cause a little bit, you know.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, I mean, you don't know. You don't know what works. I got a broken thumb from, I think I didn't anticipate some block pulls I was doing and the rebound from the bumper plates.
Yeah.
So it healed up as much as I thought it was going to heal up. And I took a couple of 5-pound deep dish plates and I laid them down together, face up. And I was just messing around after a workout and I kind of did a key pinch, you know. Yeah. So that thumb has got one plate, the other plate's the index finger. And I would just pick them up and I worked up to doing a couple of 10s, just fooling around.
Yeah.
So that thumb burned for the next 2 days.
Yeah.
Right in here. And that pain I always had from the break was gone.
Wow.
So if I hadn't just said, hey, what would happen if you just don't know?
Yeah.
You just don't know. So just if you want to go do something, go do it. Don't let anyone tell you nothing, you know? Because it's your results, it's your life, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that that exercise will ever do anything for anyone ever again in the history of the human race. I get it. But it's being true to yourself. It's giving yourself a chance, you know?
Yeah.
Doesn't matter how silly it looks. What is it? What's it going to hurt anyone for me to do that silly lift, you know?
Right.
So, and now I've got a thumb that's pain-free.
That's great.
Yeah, it's just, you just don't know.
Yeah.
But,
and then the next question was, it's just a personal one because me being too much too fast, I tweaked my back pretty good back in September on a deadlift that I probably had no business trying yet. So what's some exercises that you'd recommend to rehab my lower back and hopefully get me back to pulling sooner than later?
I have a traction setup that I came up with a while back. Have you seen that?
No.
Okay. It involves a power. Do you have a power rack? Because you're going to need a rack for this.
I just have like a bench. It's like a bench with a squat rack attached, not like a true power rack at all.
Do you have two barbells?
Just like little ones?
Yeah. Yeah. They don't.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I'll send you a video. There's a traction where you pretty much have one bar set up. Say you set this all up so you, because you're going to support yourself off the ground, so you don't want your feet touching the ground.
Sure.
So maybe a couple inches above that, but so you're going to have one bar that's at the what's called the occipital protuberance, and it's that little knob on the back of your head.
Okay.
You know that knob on the back of your head?
Yeah.
So you want the top bar set up so that you're going to lean back and it's going to come right under that knob. You're going to lean back. The other bar is going to be set up so that you can get up onto your hands with your arms extended.
Okay.
You're going to lean back into that bar. So that top bar, make sure it's not facing out, but facing into the rack.
Okay.
If it faces out and you do too much pressure, you'll fall off. You'll push you and the bar off.
Okay.
Don't ask me how I know. I ain't telling nothing. But anyways. And it can lead into doing what's called a reverse deadlift. And I'll show you a video, but pretty much it becomes, you bring your knees up and over the bar.
Okay.
And it's exactly the opposite of what you do on a deadlift. But just getting into position, it will traction all the way down into my sacrum.
Wow. Okay.
So at first, you got to break up some scar tissue. So you just might notice little bit of shifting in your neck or even in between your shoulder blades. But as you get going and you get into position, you can practice it a few times a day, and eventually your body weight will break up that scar tissue.
Nice.
Because I hope I can say this without upsetting too many people. I love chiropractic. I don't necessarily like violent adjustments. And I, because it goes back to the whole asking your body to do something versus forcing it to do something. So with this setup, as you get, you can do it multiple times a day. It's just traction. But eventually your body's going to go, oh, okay, you want me to release this and release that. And it will slowly lengthen and break up the scar tissue.
Okay.
I would start with that first. And do you do a lot of quadratus lumborum work, like a lot of side-to-side work, or no? Like a lot of side bends or bent pressing?
I just started, my friend Dave, who's helping with me with my programming, he's worked in some kettlebell bent presses and windmills and core stability stuff. And so it's in there.
Have you done a cross leg side bend? Have you seen those?
No.
Okay. That's pretty good. My last client is 52, arthritis in the sacrum, MRI confirmed.
Okay.
And he's now pain-free. And nice. I think the thing that he said really helped him out was the cross-leg side bend really helped stretch that area out. And when he's tight and he's doing it, all of a sudden you'll hear like three or four pops in his lower back. It's just
kidding.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'll show you a video on that. But,
great. Appreciate it. And I know that's something
I think
that people struggle with.
I think a lot of it is the quadratus lumborum. It's the only muscle that's connected to the sides of the spine versus either front or back. It's connected to your floating ribs, and it's connected to four out of your five lumbar vertebrae. And then it originates on the crest of the ilium, which is your pelvis. So you'll be kind of, you got one hip higher than the other, it's going to affect your lower back. So if you learn to balance it out by doing some kind of side bends.
Nice.
I do twisting side bends, cross leg side bends, and it can help balance you out, because most of us are either right-handed or left-handed. So you're going to get twisted. If you're going to do strength training, you're going to get twisted more one way than the other.
Sure. Yeah.
So that's why I do the get-ups. That's why I do the bent presses, to help keep that balance between the two.
Yeah. Same in grappling. But you develop one pathway. Major imbalances there.
Yes. I will say, what was a big help to me with grip training is I was getting frustrated with my non-dominant hand, and your non-dominant hand tends to be smaller. It's narrower and shorter. And I just got mad and frustrated. And one day I said, you know what? You two are both controlled by the same brain. I don't have a brain for, I said, so I said, it's the same brain for both of you two knuckleheads. So, and once I had that conversation with myself, the non-dominant hand improved dramatically.
Yeah.
And stays within a few pounds of the dominant hand now, which is pretty great. Cool.
That is cool.
But it was because I had that realization. I just kind of put my foot down and said, that's it.
Yeah.
One brain controls both of you. If that helps anyone, just have a talk with yourself and say, knock it off.
All right. So we reached the end point of the show. This is a rapid fire series of questions. Usually that's all about bending, but I'm going to switch it up.
Oh, okay.
Switch it up to be about lifting for the most part. So first question of the medley is favorite lift.
Two hand anyhow.
All right. Hardest lift for you?
Benching, incline benching, pressing, overhead pressing, behind the neck pressing.
All right.
My shoulders have been, I got some genetic stuff and it's better, but it's,
Gotcha.
All right. I can get out of a half Nelson. I can get out of a full Nelson. I can dislocate my shoulders whenever I want.
Perfect. You'll be great in grappling.
Oh, yeah.
All right. something.
I'm really good at fingle fingers in strongman, but I'm no good at any pressing movements. It makes no sense at all.
Yeah.
Anyways.
So something outside of strength training, strength feats that you enjoy, something outside that realm.
Dodge Power Wagons.
All right, cool. All right. What's the one, well, usually I ask, what's the one bend that got away? But let's do, what's the one lift that's got away so far?
The one lift that's got away so far.
One that's haunting you.
I guess one hand pinching some deep dish York 45s. That one is still nice. Haunting me.
Nice.
I guess that would be the one.
Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Here's a fun one. This usually stumps people, but to preface it, it's completely open-ended. So the question is, who's the strongest person you know? This could be some guy from your town, your grandpa, somebody that you know within lifting. There's no rules. Yeah. This is just, and if you can't think of anybody, then just name one of the strongest people you want to know and give them some shine.
No. One of the strongest people I know. Quite possibly it was my father's father. Cool. The one I said that did wrestling in carnivals.
Yeah.
He could walk up and down stairs on just his hands. And he used to win log rolling on the river. Yeah.
Cool.
He used to win log rolling competitions.
No way.
He lied about his age to get into World War One.
Wow.
Because he was too young. And then he lied about his age because he was too old to get into World War Two.
Sure.
I would say he's probably the strongest person I know.
That's cool.
Probably second to that would be Chuck Yeager, who just died at 97 years old.
Wow.
He's the guy that broke the sound barrier back in 1947. And he also, I think he got separated from his unit and he was had to fend for himself for four and a half months to keep from being caught by Germans. So he was just whatever he could live on in the woods for four and a half months, you know, so.
Unreal.
That's a pretty, and anyone that lives to be over 80 years old, you got to be strong.
Yeah.
Getting old is not for the weak.
Yeah. Good answers.
Thank you.
How about the best piece of advice you were ever given? This could be about strength training or life in general.
Pop, my father is not a talker. With advice, but he said, everyone waits till they're ready to get married, to have kids, to buy a house. And he goes, there's no such thing. Just do it. Just live life. And I'm like, cool. Okay. He goes, plan if you can, but if you can't, so what? It's life. Just live it. Just don't worry about it. Just live life.
Nice.
So I thought that was pretty good. His attitude with us kids was, I don't care how much noise you make, as long as it's happy. If it's unhappy noise, there's going to be problems.
Huh.
Keep it happy.
That's cool.
Okay, Pop. And he didn't care. We could hoot and holler as long as it was happy. He did not care.
That's cool.
Yeah, I thought so.
All right, and the last one I usually ask is the funniest reaction a person has had when they find out you spend your time bending nails. So.
Funniest reaction. I worked as a waiter for many years. I worked in restaurants about 20 years, and I used to bend nails for kids. And I would say just those reactions. And of course, the kids' reaction is awesome. But because I would do it at the end of the meal, and then the wife would lean over to the husband and say, can you just tip him a little more, would you? Thank you. You know, kind of like we better tip him, which isn't why I did it. But I thought it was funny that oftentimes the wife would lean over and say, honey, throw down another five, okay?
That's cool.
But I love doing it for the kids because when I would do strongman, the kids would come up to you and want to talk to you. And it's you have to talk to them, you know.
Yeah.
They could be doing it someday. So anything you can do to encourage kids are gonna be crazy. They can either get into drugs and alcohol, or they can get into something like bending steel, which doesn't cost a lot of money. They can go down to a hardware store, get some kind of nails, get some steel, get a couple pieces of leather.
Yep.
Weights is a little bit harder. I mean, it's easy enough, but
you
know, it's easy to just say, yeah, let me take you down to the store. We'll get some bolts. We'll get some nails. I'll show you how to bend. I think if you can get kids excited, because to them it's like magic when you bend a nail in front of them, you know?
Yeah. So. My son is nine. Well, my older son is nine, Caden. And he grapples, he lifts with me, he's doing push-ups, all the stuff. And he does bending too, right? So he snaps 3/16ths. He competed in the junior league with David Horn's competition.
Nice.
So, and with me and him, man, it's just like, obviously I like that he's into what I'm into, but I wouldn't care if he wasn't, you know. It's like the fact is, it's just a culture I'm trying to show in my house. Like we mentioned in the beginning of the show, music was for me growing up, you know. It was just like just around. So with all this strength stuff and grappling, that's just kind of like, I don't want him to even think of it as something he does. I just want him to think of it as like, it's just part of life, you know?
Well, and it's a healthy outlet.
Yeah.
It's a positive, healthy outlet.
Yeah.
You know, and that if he ever wants to be better at it, he's going to have to take care of himself.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? It kind of can lead to some good positive stuff beyond in of itself. So
it's definitely,
you know,
all right. In closing, who's someone you'd like to see me have on the show?
Someone I would like to see you have on the show. Well, have you had Tanner Merkel on yet?
No, but I've talked to him a little bit. I'm working on that one. So, well, that's a good answer. Okay. That's a good reminder to get him on.
Tanner Merkel. Just so he can remind us that he's just too awesome for all of us. Have you had Dennis Rogers on?
I'm working on it. He's a little bit hard to get in touch with, but I'm working on it.
He is the nicest guy in the world. I met him. I was competing at York had a strength picnic, and this would be back in 2011. It's where the mighty, where the Atom and Slim the Hammer Man were inducted into the Hall of Fame.
Oh, nice.
And of course, Dennis was mentored by Slim the Hammer Man.
Yep.
And I had just, was it Scam School? Is that what it's called? Scam School on YouTube. And Dennis was on an episode of Scam School.
Oh, okay.
And I'd just seen it. And so when I got there and I was able to, and Dennis was just great and approachable and just very funny and just a great guy. If you get him, if you get Dennis on there too.
Nice.
If you ever get a chance to meet him, he's a great guy.
Cool. Yeah.
And he can bend some stuff, dude. he can bend some stuff.
Yeah.
It's just cool because, you know, seeing someone bend steel is just insane. Yeah, picking up a barbell. Okay, that's great. Don't get me wrong. It's awesome. But just to deform a piece of metal that was made with a lot of heat.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's, you got to admit, it's pretty crazy. It's awesome, but it's crazy.
Oh yeah. You know. Oh no, no doubt. All my all my grappling friends are like, God damn, they're like, what are you up to? They're like, don't come back to grappling.
Oh. The tendon and ligament strength it's gotta build, dude.
Yeah.
Are you kidding?
Yeah.
No, that's awesome. Yeah. And it teaches you to work in a very, well, for me, I would work in a very tight spot and not really be moving much, but to be tensing and stay tensing and to not be moving. And that's not easy. You know, you just want to release that pressure and you can't. Well, you can bend the damn thing and then you can release the pressure. So, no, this has been a great podcast. This has been a lot of fun. I've enjoyed it. I hope you
did. Thank you, man. Oh, yeah, absolutely. This is a great one. And we got two more things and then we're out of here. So,
yeah. What do you got?
Tips and advice for beginner lifters.
Keep it simple. Keep it simple and it'll come. Just let it take time. It's going to take time. It's okay. Yeah. There's no rush. There's no rush at all. Don't rush it.
The long game. That's been a theme of the last few guests I've had, man.
I'm telling you, I'm 49 and I'm still hitting PRs.
That's great.
I'm still, being able to do stuff I've never done before. And that's not going to happen if I was 15 and blew my load all over the place all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I understand what it's like to be 15 and you want to kill everything in the gym. I get it. Just try to remember that if you can keep at this the next 30 years, dude, you can do some amazing stuff.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah.
I'm very thankful for Strongman. Strongman pushed me way beyond what I probably would have done on my own. And it gave me the ability to do what I do now. But Strongman isn't just pick it up and put it down. It's like, pick it up. It's trying to crush you. Now run around with it for 30 to 40 seconds, you know?
Yeah.
Great. Awesome. You know?
Yeah.
So just, I know it sounds impossible to tell someone who's 14 or 15 to take 30, you know, that if you do it right, you can be doing this 30 years from now, 40 years from now.
Yeah. Yeah.
You will still be gaining for at least the next 30 years. So yeah. It's worth it.
Yeah. And I don't think the person needs to be 14 or 15, you know, like you, it feels good to see those gains in the beginning.
Sure.
That like someone of wisdom, like yourself telling you to play the long game. That's valuable stuff.
Man. Oh yeah. Like, oh yeah. Yeah. It's, I don't feel like I'm losing or slowing down or whatever you want to call it. I don't sit there and say, I better not do this or that. I don't have any of that. You know, it's just a matter of, I will say I'm incorporating more movement into my training to make up for the lack of movement in my daily life that I don't have.
Yep.
If that makes any sense.
Yeah, that does. Yeah. And where can people find you on social media and stuff?
Well, Strongman Archaeology on Facebook. I have a Strongman Archaeology page and Strongman Archaeology on TikTok, Strongman Archaeology on Instagram.
Great.
And Strongman Archaeology on Daily Motion.
All right. Okay, cool.
It's my alternative to the other video platform that still is digging me for copyright issues from 6 or 7 years ago, and I'm tired of it.
Jesus. So, all right.
I'm like, dude, if you didn't catch me in the first 30 days, just leave me alone.
But yeah.
Every once in a while, 5 years ago, you had this CD playing in the background. I'm like,
good
I
Lord.
Paid for the CD. The band got their cut. Leave me alone.
Yeah.
So,
and last thing, any events, brands, or gear you want to shout out before we're done?
Brands, events, shout out before you're done. No, nothing.
Okay.
Nothing I can think of. I guess I got to be fair. I will say Rogue's Deep Dish series looks to be pretty good. I know there's some controversy with some people, but maybe some of the, because I have plates that go back to the 1930s.
Yeah.
And some of my globe barbells and dumbbells go back to pre-World War I.
Yep.
But I will say from the look of it that Rogue's Deep Dish series is really well made, extremely well priced. And it's made in the USA. Nice. And I am shocked at how cheap they're offering it for being made in the USA, their deep dish plates. And it looks like the fit and finish, like it looks like some of their 100 pounders are coming in within half a pound, which is ridiculous.
Yeah.
I mean, you're almost paying calibrated plates for that.
Yeah.
You know, for that kind of accuracy. So,
yeah.
I gotta give it to Rogue. They seem to have done a really nice job. Have you seen any of their, have you seen them?
Yes. Jed brought them up on the show last week, actually. So I was checking them out just this past week.
Yep. I gotta give it to them. It's a ductile iron that they're using. And no, I don't get paid by Rogue or sponsored by Rogue. But I have to give credit where credit is due. They've done a really nice job. I really wasn't concerned when I heard they were going to do that. But now that it's come out, it's like, geez, that's a really nice job. And you see the price and you're like, because I think a pair of hundreds was going for $305 for the pair.
Yeah.
Made in the U.S.
Yeah. Can't beat that.
I don't know what your shipping's going to be on wherever you live. But
Yeah.
Anyways.
All right, James. Well, that's a wrap, man. I really appreciate you coming on. It was a hell of a lot of fun to talk to you.
Thank you. Thank you. I hope we do it again sometime. That was fun.
Cool. That was fun. And like I said, you know, I'm sure I'm not alone in saying when I scroll across your Instagram, that's a daily inspiration, man. It's very cool to
Thank
see.
You. Thank you.
So keep it up, and Thank you. I'll be in touch.
All right. Thanks, man.
Have a good rest of the night.
Thanks, you too.